We're on now. Can you tell the difference? Can you tell I've turned into Dennis the Menace? Whole different persona.
I can see that you've turned into Dennis.
You can. Menace.
Yeah.
Wow. What does that look like? What does that look like? Oh, my gosh.
You've turned completely green.
Oh, no. Wow. I'm a little scared of myself right now. Would you introduce yourself, please?
Hi, I'm Lindsay Jordan from Snail Mail.
So what percentage of the world calls you Lindsay, and what percentage was, hey, Snail?
People love to call me that.
Yo, Snail!
Not enough people call me Lindsay.
I think it'd be pretty funny. Yo, hey, Snail! Hey, hello, Mrs. Mail!
I get that.
Are you home, Miss Mail?
I get it all.
There was classical guitar.
Yep.
There was Ellicott City?
Ellicott.
But
you can call it Ellicott.
I'll call it, well, I don't know, because I've never been to Ellicott City.
That's fair.
I do know, we're going to go here, that it was haunted. And that there are many places there that are haunted. I like that. There were the Eight Balls cover band.
Yeah.
Three Eight Balls songs that you hated playing.
I think Brown Eyed Girl. Maybe I got a little tired of Sweet Home, but I don't think I did at the time.
And then my favorite thing, and as a guy, I have to be careful here, is Bra La La.
Oh, yeah.
So still open?
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah. Still chugging along. Yeah.
What's it like to grow up as a woman with a mom that owned that?
So it opened when I was 8, and I remember being like, because, you know, she opened the store, and it wasn't like an initial, like, she didn't go to college to open a bra store or anything. You know, she was working at NIH for a little while, and eventually I think was like, I want to do my own thing. There's a lack of healthy, like, fitting information, and she goes about it in the health way. You know, she's very
right.
And so I, when I was little,
it's not
I was
the
like,
hustler store.
No. When I was little, I was like, why don't you open a? She could open anything. I was sad she didn't open like a candy store, an ice cream store, or something. And you know, as I've gotten older, it's nice to get free lingerie. I didn't know it's like as expensive as it is.
I'm kind of jealous. I want the male. I don't know what the male version of Bra La La would be called. There's all sorts of things that would be inappropriate, though.
Totally.
I can't even imagine.
Yeah.
First record at 15. But man, oh man, 15 is a heavy load to make your first record.
It totally is. I mean, things show up later, and I can see as an adult now, like, where it is a lot more loaded than I ever thought before.
If you knew what you knew back then, right?
Yeah, or
what you know now back then.
Yeah, I mean, I'm very good at taking bad news in my adult life. I'm good at asserting myself. I've learned a lot of really great skills, but not without difficulty, not without trial.
So where was the segue? And this is a strange segue for me, where you said, you know what? It feels good to look good. I can look pretty. I can wear clothing I like. I can do what the F I want to.
Yeah.
Where'd you figure that out?
Well, I should start by saying I found out that I think my style is best described as Butch, femme and Butch in the middle, somewhere
I like
in the
Butch.
Center.
Yeah, Butch. I'm gonna use that.
Or like denim jacket lesbian. It's like somewhere right in the middle. And I think I guess I've always had at least like a little bit of interest in fashion, but I think once I got out of being like a child rocker and now that I'm like an adult rocker, it's like there's a, you kind of have to be strategic about how you're going to present yourself. And I think at least for me, like I wasn't like, my initial reaction wasn't like, I was like, all right, now I'm 18, I'm going to show my tits. It was more like, I was just like, my way of presenting in a more mature way is just being really put together and like having like a concise stylistic presentation that goes with how intentional the record is and the music videos and all that stuff.
So really, it's part of the business, and you know it's part of the business too.
Well, I mean, you know,
I mean, it's also what you want to do.
I
don't
look
get
cool
me wrong
on the weekends too. It's all about consistency. I think that putting out all these extremely stylized music videos, stylized music, stylized album cover, it's more about, it's like walking out of the house just looking clean cut and like tailored. That's important to me.
But I get that because that relates to so many other things.
Yeah.
That
control
have
freak.
That have either caused you Success or Pain. Mm-hmm. You've been on the label on Matador since 18. Mm-hmm. Were you playing somewhere and someone walked into the club and how did I love origin stories because it's never what I think it is. And it's never the way it's supposed to be.
No, so Snail Mail, we were initially playing house shows, booking our own tours, you know, sleeping on dirty basement floors at punk houses and stuff like that. And one day took a tour with the punk band Priests, and somewhere on that tour, and we didn't have anybody pushing us or anything. We didn't have like connections or anything. It was just somebody, I don't know what happened. I made a music video for that song Thinning with one of my friends, and it all of a sudden, Thinning was Pitchfork Best New Music, and we had all these manager offers, agent offers, like 10 wow. or 11 label offers, and
holy moly,
took all the meetings for the free dinner. And Matador, Matador, I actually just felt like out of all of them, just were people that seemed to like really care about music and like longevity and not just riding the wave, which is where I want to be, you know, making an actual career out of songwriting, not just like taking advantage of a moment. That's important to me, and it has been the entire time. So that was a big like factor.
Okay, I'm just gonna go right here early on, and then we're gonna leave it alone.
All because right.
You lost yourself.
Yeah.
You had 3 years of touring. You burned out, and your friends wanted to help.
Yeah.
But how do we take that story and make it more meaningful? Is there a way to get beyond those bullet points over and over again? And I'm not belittling those bullet points, but there was a switch that flipped. And 3 years of touring can knock anybody off their game.
Yeah.
That's what everybody uses. I don't think that's the story here.
I don't think it is either, but you know.
Yeah, so well. So now that I've given you an opening not to follow these exact rules.
I mean, nobody forced me to do anything. I forced myself at the end of the day. But I think it's a dramatic solution for like the means to the end being just to be like excited and renewed and like wanting to make music again because I love it. I think the common denominator between all of the dark things in my life that were pushing me into like a black hole was that I tend to strive for this unreachable level of perfection in every single thing I do, and not being able to do everything to the best of my ability because I was just in such a horrible place. It was a matter of either I go and deal with this now in an extreme way, you know, so that I could make another record and do the cycle, because that is hard, you know, and being in a clear-headed space enough to like go take it on the road and deal with negative stuff and, you know, negative, you know, people not liking the record, people, you know, whatever. There are tons of things that just, you know, just touring a record, just like putting out a record, tons of challenges that come with that. But there are also tons of other challenges going on in my life, you know, and that's
it gets too much.
It's a lot. And at the end of the day, it all gets, I take everything out on myself. So it's like, if I don't feel happy with what I'm doing, if I don't feel like I'm reaching at least like a level that of perfection that I feel good about, and even when bad things are happening to me that are out of my control, everything gets taken back out on myself. So that is why I made the decision to just go clean up and just like be a, you know, get myself mentally in shape, you know.
Now, you know what's amazing? You actually said all of that in a positive way. All this stuff in the old days, in the olden days, when you were a musician, you didn't have to post on your Insta and do your Twitch and do your Twitter and do your this and do your that. You just showed up You made a record. You played. Do you think, like, if you walked into that world right now, would it bother you? Or would you be like, oh, this is the coolest thing ever?
I think, Dennis, I think that I would finally feel at peace and comfortable being a part of the, you know, I don't know. I was just talking about this. I just think social media is so uncool.
Which came first? Going to your parents' house to write the record. Notice I'm saving you time here. Or knowing you were going to have Brad Cook as a producer and that this thing was just going to sound so effing crazily wonderful, which it does.
Thank you. Going to my parents' house was first, and I spent a good amount of time trying to figure out who the co-producer was going to be. I was like, not.
And by the way, a co-producer, very important for people to know, I'll do it, that you have ears. Yeah. You know what you want to do here. True. You're not going to let no producer come in and go, okay, you need this much reverb.
That's right.
You ain't going to do
right.
that, are you?
No. The process was so different from Lush, more because I knew what I wanted this time. And I know how to work a studio in a way that I didn't when I first started. And my mindset was kind of like timid in a way where now I enter a room to get a job done. I know what the job is, and I know, I really trust my own intuition in a studio, you know, to be like, this is done, this needs more. Let's add this and this and this, and let's take away this. And, you know, and I find that finding a compatible brain to share the studio with is hard. You got to trust that person's taste fully. You know, you have to trust that if you ask them a question, you trust the answer. And Brad just has great taste, and he's a cool guy. That was like the first thing.
That's what you need.
Yeah. And I like spending time with him. You know, we could have spent that entire time just hanging out. A lot of our time together is just spent shooting the crap.
I'm going to give you a name. Okay. Todd Haynes.
Yeah. Carol.
Tell me something.
I didn't see the new Velvet Underground documentary yet. He worked on that, right? Carol was one of the first lesbian movies that I ever saw, which is huge for me personally. And this is about to sound just, you know, ignorant, but it's so rare, at least was rare for me at the time, to like see lesbians portrayed and in art and actually like be attracted to them. And Kate Blanchett and Rooney Mara, I was like, oh my God, like I'm like so, like I'm like, look at them go. Like this is a love story I'm curious about. And I don't know, I really connected to it. And I asked for it on DVD for Christmas when I was 15. And I also got from my sister, who knew I was gay at the time, a t-shirt that said, Carol directed by Todd Haynes, 2015. And I still, on that, you know, now, I had to come out to my parents.
Did you wear
that
to school and people kind of go, how come you're not wearing the whatever t-shirt?
I definitely wore it. I'm sure I wore it to school. People didn't, no, I don't think people, I was always dressing a little kind of
different,
kind of funky. Yeah. For a while there.
I get it. I did too.
But I love Carol. I think it's so good.
You notice, by the way, how I led you there without saying so. You discovered a lesbian movie, and then that gave you a powerful example of who you could be as a woman moving forward.
Yeah, but I used that to come out. I was with my parents on that Christmas. I was like, they made some joke about how me and my bassist are in love with each other, and we are on a friendship level, you know.
Right.
You know, he's my best friend in the world. But I was like, no, Mom, I'm a lesbian, holding Carol. On DVD.
When in doubt, pull out the reference.
Exactly.
That's awesome. So where do you find an opportunity to take a deep breath? Have you figured it out?
No. I have a very hard time emotionally leaving the venue, so to speak, I think, or leaving the studio. If I have a bad show or a session that I'm not happy with or something like that, I'll just ruminate on it for a week. Even if I'm on tour and there's another show coming up, it doesn't matter. I'll be playing the next show thinking about the last show being bad. Like, so relaxation for me is something that I have to force myself into.
There are two parts to the record. there's that the glossier part, mm-hmm. and there's the not as glossy part. Mm-hmm. You are performing both parts. When you get to the non-glossy part, is it informative or is it like, oh man, I now made this record, I have to live with this record?
The non-glossy stuff is, it creates its own life. The more you perform, I think having a lot of the songs are emotionally difficult for me to sing, like still, even though, you know, whatever, I've had the record done for kind of a while. And I find sometimes when I'm performing, like the rawness of like what the song is bringing up for me is not the most palatable glossy thing. Like sometimes it just sounds like I'm about to cry. And I think some people do like that, but it's not glossy, you know? So, and I think about there are things that I think like I can get down to like science, you know, practice it enough times, do it enough times, like
as that if, you're just performing it instead of feeling it.
Yes. And then there are the songs that get felt no matter what. And it's like a different art. It's a different thing.
But you can still be sincere and real by performing it instead of feeling it. Can you not?
I think you can tell.
It's hard though. Okay. I read something and then I had to cue this up. Let's see if you know who this is. And then I'll tell you, I read obscure things.
Yeah, it's the Sundays. Yeah, it's so good.
Right? So this, we'll let it go for it. Right?
Places I go, make you feel tongue-tied.
Okay, so my question to you is, I read that you have a big giant poster. What does it mean to you?
Totally.
But when I read about the Sundays, I was like, I've got to meet this woman. Because listen how, and let me tell you why. It's the ultimate example of beautiful and pretty and just so sad.
Yeah.
Like as sad as it gets.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I mean, I love those records. Yeah. Well, I found there was like this very drunk woman at one of our shows. I was at the merch table. This was like pretty early Snail Mail. I used to, you know, just hang out in the crowd all the time. And she went up to me and she was like, you guys are just like the Sundays. Like she was like wasted. And I was like, what's the Sundays? She was like, you got to check them out. You guys are just like the Sundays. I was like, okay.
And she had that exact accent, I'm sure, because they always do. When they're drunk, they always have that weird Southern accent.
Yeah. And her friend was like, I don't know. I remember her friend being like, I don't know if I think they are. And I was like, oh, cool. Well, I'm going to check it out. And I immediately was like, wow, where has this been all my life?
Okay, I'm going to go for it.
Might as well.
One word. Love. Are you still willing to fall despite all the risks?
Yeah, I'm in love. I think my takeaway from all the risk and all, you know, whatever you hear in Valentine, that life experience, like, is just that love has to be redefined over and over again the more that you learn about yourself and your needs and wants. And it has to be looked at from, like, a real-life perspective, not from a book and movie perspective. That's my takeaway.
What can somebody do to make you happy?
I like romance. I like when the effort is put in to curate romance. So I don't light a candle or two, bring some flowers. I like that aspect of it. I also, you know, there's like the deeper stuff, you know, communicating.
Oh, come on. Wait, now you're over the top here.
I know.
You mean you want people to say what they feel and actually tell you?
That makes me feel cared for, yeah.
That's scary, though, because, boy, that takes a lot of work.
Absolutely.
I invented a thing called a musical sandwich. And what it is two of your songs on the outside and then songs by others in between.